Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Nobody likes this guy. I hate to be this guy. I never want to be the guy who says, I told you so. But Laker fans, I told you so. I told you last night was a game you absolutely had to have, that you had to get over on little brother, especially after losing to Phoenix on Saturday, especially after being eviscerated and glossed goofballs by Snoop.
Goofballs.
And I told you I did not want to have to come back in here and run back everything I said just 24 hours after I said it. But here we are. Here the bleep we are.
Here we are. Here the we are.
Because the Clippers just humiliated the Lakers 113-105 last night at Staples. The Clippers went into their house, punched them in the face, ate their grub, drank their beer, got with their ladies, and it was that bad, especially in the second half. Again, that game last night, that was a kill or be killed game for the Lakers. You know, the one game where anything freaking goes. All their pride. The entire season was on the line. You do whatever the hell is necessary to get a win. Anything. Anything. And instead, they did nothing. This isn't exactly breaking news, but the Clippers are better. They're the better team. They just are. Now, what you didn't expect was to see how much tougher, how much nastier, how much more motivated they are than the Lakers. I thought the Lakers were the ones playing for their entire season. I thought the Lakers were the ones playing for their jobs. Weren't the Clippers supposed to just lay down and die this season? I mean, clearly it is the other way around. The Lakers are the goofballs, and the Clippers are running circles around them, both on and off the floor, on the court, and in the front office. Calling this season a disaster for the Lakers does not begin to do it justice. The question is it the most disappointing season in Laker history? And before you answer that question, do not sleep on the incredible train wreck that was Kobe, Dwight, Steve, Powell, and Mehta. You know, that season that ended in a first-round sweep 6 years ago. Let's never forget how truly awful that was. You want to know what's even more awful? You want to know what's even more humiliating than that memory, Laker fans? That's the last time your crew reached the playoffs. So where does that leave us? Is this the worst season they've ever had, or is it the best season in the last 6 years? And can it be both? And the answer is yes. Hell yes, it's both. You want to talk about what happened last night? You want to talk about how they lost another must-win game and why that happened? Easy. The same reasons that this season has been such a catastrophe and they're on the outside looking in right now. Same old stuff. Same old things. One, they're busted up. Two, they can't shoot a lick on the perimeter. And three, the next player that any of these goofballs defense will be the first. The fact is, you're not going to win a hell of a lot of games if you can't put the ball in the hole. And you can't keep the other guy from doing it to you, and you can't put your five best guys on the floor who already weren't good enough. You know, fact is, everybody has injuries, so nobody gives a damn about them. But the injuries are not the reason they can't shoot and they can't defend. Lots of blame to go around here. In fact, there's nobody pulling a check from the Lakers that doesn't deserve some blame. And I'll get there. But first, put some respect on the Clippers. They earned it. They're better. They actually have an identity. And that identity is toughness, professionalism. I'm not saying the Lakers don't have an identity. Oh, they do. Their identity is an aging, busted-up LeBron and a bunch of goofballs. The Lakers find a way to beat themselves every single night. The Clippers, though, are tough. Man, they're tough as hell. They're ready to give you the hands every single night. The Lakers don't have anybody like my guy, my man, Patrick Beverley.
Did you play with anybody, like, when you were a kid, when you were young, who plays like you?
No, I played for Miami. Mm-hmm. With LeBron, they cut me. I got drafted by the Lakers. They traded me to Miami. Ron got there. They cut me. I remember like it was yesterday. So, yeah, it's a chip on my shoulder.
So listen to the question that set that whole thing up. He's being asked about whether, when he was a kid, he ever played with anybody who was like him when he was a kid. And he immediately goes into this fire about what he had going into that game, what it was all about. I mean, that wasn't the question, but the truth is, it didn't matter what the question was. Pat Bev had the answer, and his answer was they were going to kick the Lakers' ass no matter what. No matter what he was asked, he was going to answer that way. They were going to kick the Lakers' ass, and he wasn't done either.
It was seven people in here media day. I remember like it was yesterday. I told Shea, I say, Shea, look at the room. It's seven people media here. Watch at the end of the year. Like I said about us being the best team in L.A., a lot of people don't believe me. It's fine. Women lie. Men lie. Numbers don't.
They're the best team in L.A. The numbers don't lie, and neither do your eyes. Pat Beverly was getting in guys' faces. Harrell going through their chests. Danilo Gallinari murdering the Lakers all over the floor. Like I said, Pat and the Clippers are tough. The Lakers aren't. I mean, I don't want to single anybody out unfairly, but do you really think that Pat Beverly was going to be intimidated by Alex Caruso? You see, the Clippers are everything that the Lakers aren't. The Lakers aren't physically tough. They aren't mentally tough. They broke down physically first and then mentally at the trade deadline when they couldn't pull the trigger on Anthony Davis. And then whenever they had to have it, had to step up, had to step into the ring, they got knocked the hell out. Oftentimes by teams that should not have been able to carry their jock. And whenever things started to get tough, whenever things started going against the Lakers, they would just fold. You know, like when the going gets tough, they quit. They miss shots on offense. They miss assignments on defense. And then a lead turns into a deficit, and a close game turns into a blowout. I mean, last night, aside from LeBron and Rondo, who else played? I mean, seriously, can you think of anybody else who was on the floor for the Lakers last night? Maybe Reggie Bullock clanking open shots. Maybe that balding guy who looks like Steve Blake's dad or grandfather. That's about it. Clippers, meanwhile, traded their best player at the deadline. They were supposed to give up on the season. They were supposed to miss the playoffs. They were supposed to keep their lottery pick. They were supposed to focus on free agents. Instead, they're coming out every single night, clocking fools and goofballs like the Lakers, and then flexing. And then what about the Lakers? This is nothing new, I hate to say. They got LeBron, they brought back Magic, they hired Rob Pelinka, and yet somehow nothing has changed in the last 6 years. It's like they're Kobe Dwight with less star power, flailing around, looking for an identity, chasing stars, usually missing on them, and the only thing they come up with is, yeah, well, we're the Lakers. Yeah, right, and what? Because now we're the Lakers means you miss the playoffs every single year. And now what? Now what do you do with LeBron? Now they're going to miss the playoffs again, and they've got to consider the possibility of shutting down LeBron. I mean, I can't believe we're at this point. But not only is that a question, it's a strong possibility, a reality. This guy's not right. They're not making the playoffs. Why would you keep running him out there, using up minutes on his legs and running the risk of even further injury? I mean, I know that he's already saying that he doesn't want to do it, but if you're not going to make the playoffs, there is no point in risking it. Isn't that right, Dirk?
Shut it down! Let's go home!
I don't know what's worse. I don't know what's more humiliating for the Lakers. Shutting down LeBron and keeping him out of meaningless games at the end of the season, or not shutting down LeBron and running him out there in meaningless games at the end of the season? Hey, look, nobody was expecting a title in year one, but missing the playoffs and possibly shutting down LeBron early? I mean, how's that taste, Laker fan? Better yet, how is it living in a Clippers town and running around with a big dump in your pants?
You have a big dump in your pants.
Man, it was that bad. The Clippers are everything the Lakers aren't, and the Clippers allegedly weren't even trying. 1-800-636-8686. What says you, LeBron?
Listen, you keep playing to the end and see what happens, you know, at the end of the day. So, you know, I've been talking about it for a while now. We shouldn't even – everyone's been talking about the postseason. We need to worry about each and every game, how we can continue to get better with our process and get better with our team. So, you know, obviously, you know, at the end of the year, you know, the chips will fall where they may, you know, and you'll see where you're at.
Damn, what a bunch of word salad that is. Just a bunch of process, let the chips fall where they may, get a little better every single day. We're not worried about the playoffs. Man, what a bunch of word salad. Shut them down. Shut them down. They're not going to the postseason. Why would you run this guy out there when he's not right and risk further injury and put even more miles on him? Yeah, it's a bad look. So is missing the playoffs. Shut him down. Gear up. Try to get ready to trade for Anthony Davis again and somehow, some way, find somebody to take your money who matters. I am hyped to tell you about a brand new sponsor for the Daily Jungle, Outer Known. I understand that finding high-quality clothing that fits great is not always easy. Let me tell you about my favorite new company. A company founded by pro surfer and 11-time world champion Kelly Slater. A company whose mission is to provide great clothes that do not harm the environment. I'm talking about Outer Known clothes. Outer Known clothes are for people and planet. High-quality, sustainable clothes, durable construction, and great fit. Outer Known only works with factories that pay fair living wages and provide safe working conditions. I've watched Kelly Slater for years. I have always respected him, his brand, and his business. And when we had this opportunity to go into a partnership for this, it was a no-brainer. I love the way the clothes look. I love the way they feel. I love what that company's about and what they represent. Go to outerknown.com today. Enter my code Rome at checkout. You'll get 25% off your full price order. That's outerknown.com. OUTERKNOWN.com. And remember to use my code Rome at checkout. Get 25% off. Check them out right now. Outerknown.com. And don't forget the promo code Rome and get your 25% off. Brandon Copeland is my guest. Brandon, great to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm great. So many things I want to talk to you about, but let me start right here. When you were playing high school football at Gilman in Baltimore and you started thinking about going to college, playing college football, what kind of programs were interested in you and what drew you to Penn?
Yeah, I was recruited by a lot of D1AA programs, Towson's, William & Mary, New Hampshire's, sort of FCS schools. And what actually drove me to Penn was the third to last game of my senior season. My coach threw me in on kickoff return. I hadn't played kickoff return since rec league, you know, since middle school type of thing. And one of my own teammates fell on my ankle and it popped. And I played the rest of the season, but I was limping around. And that was for me the wake up call that my parents are right, my grandparents are right in terms of you're literally one play away from having it all taken away from you. So that, for me, made me decide to go to a school like Penn, get a degree. And my grandfather, he played in the NFL for 11 years, and he always said, if you're good enough, they'll come find you. So I took the harder route football-wise, but I wanted to make sure, you know, I set myself up for success in the future.
Brandon Copeland joining us. All right, then. So you get to Penn. While you were at Penn, you were doing internships in the offseason. What were the internships, and then what did you take away from those experiences?
Yeah, so I worked on Wall Street at UBS, Union Bank of Switzerland. My first summer there, it was a rotational program, so I got to rotate throughout the bank. And then second summer there, I settled in on sales and trading, so selling stocks, finding good stocks, figuring out whether we should sell them, we should buy them, and learning how to pitch them. But for me, that ultimately just helped me develop a understanding of how to research different names and ultimately be able to do that for myself. So it was great experiences up in New York City. You know, as a college kid, it was awesome trying to balance that with training and stuff, but, you know, wouldn't trade that for the world.
Brandon Copeland joining us. I mean, it's amazing. And then you go undrafted in 2013. You sign with the Ravens. Then they waive you. And then you sign with the Titans. And you're on their practice squad. At that point, how much time were you spending on football? And then how much time were you spending on continuing to learn about business and even doing some day trading on the side?
Yeah, at that point, I was young and dumb. I'll say that much. But I was day trading in between meetings, in between training sessions and you know, it was a hectic lifestyle for me, but I was young and thought that I could tackle it all and be the Ivy League football player that takes his money and multiplies it in the market. And since then, I've learned it's a lot easier and better to go to sleep at night comfortable and to be able to walk into a meeting comfortable by investing in things that I'm not worried whether they're going to go up or down in the next 5 minutes because of some news. So yeah, since then, I've been more long-term in my strategy and just safer, longer-term investments. Still stock picking as I choose, but, you know, things that, like I said, I can sleep at night and not be worried that I'm going to mess up my net worth.
Well, man, I've never done it, but day trading sounds very stressful to me. Brandon Copeland joining us. I mean, I mentioned the stats at the top. You had a really, really good year with the Jets, but you were out of the league in 2014, and from everybody around you, it seemed pretty clear you had an excellent future in finance and business. You could have just said, I'm going all in on business, but you didn't do that. How come?
Yeah, I think, actually talking with my grandfather as well, he mentioned it's one of those things where if you feel confident in your abilities in football, it really motivated me to come back and come back stronger than before. You know, I think for me, when I went out, I tore my pec, I was trending in the right direction and even on the verge of finally starting after a roller coaster ride of a career. And for me, I couldn't live with that, with not going back and trying. And I'm so happy that I did. You know, I never doubted that in my mind. But in that time, what I did was just maximize that rehab and free time to just live, be a better husband, be a better son, father, kept up with family members. And then my wife and I, we started our real estate company. So I would literally maximize time by just learning as much as I can about flips and renovations and the cost of stuff. And we ended up flipping 5 houses during the time that I was off alone. So always trying to do something, but maximizing time nonetheless.
New York Jet, Brandon Copeland joining us. I mean, there's so much to this story. And then when you were in Detroit, the story goes, you and a couple of teammates were driving throughout Detroit looking at potential real estate investments. One teammate said that he would have loved to have had a class on taxes, budgets, finances, investments, and more, essentially the things that he knew at that point in his career but didn't know back when he left college. What was your reaction when you heard that?
I thought that was an outstanding idea and suggestion. And I remember us talking about it and talking about how much money you would have saved if you had only known, right? And then extrapolating that idea and thinking, like, that's just not an athlete, problem. That's a world problem, right? That's just a people and person problem. So I think athletes, we get it bad. Everyone talks about us because, these guys go broke and all that stuff. But that's just because our salaries are in the news. So you know what we're making. But the average Joe, the average person, it has problems with budgeting as well. So what we did was, what I did was take that idea and just flush it out and run with it and figure out what a class like that actually looks like, how to create a safe environment for people to talk and discuss these financial situations and scenarios. And it's been going well thus far. We're midway in, and in our next class, we're talking about buying your first house and the cost of renting. And my biggest goal, like I said, is, you look back on your life and, 5 years down the road, 6 years down the road, 20 years down the road, a lot of people can point to a financial misdecision that they made, and you might still make mistakes. You're still going to make mistakes, but there's no reason why we should not learn about those topics prior to us making these big decisions. The first time I learned about buying a house shouldn't be when I'm sitting down trying to purchase my first house for my, my family, right? That could lead to a 30-year bad decision if I do that the wrong way and I'm just learning on the fly. So, class has been going great and looking forward to continuing it.
Jets linebacker Brandon Copeland joining us. Brandon, I want to make sure they understand what's going on here. So you took that idea for that class and you pitched it to Penn, and now you are the co-professor of a class at Penn. I got to know, what was it like standing up in front of the class and teaching that first class at your alma mater?
Man, nerve-wracking.
Right.
Nerve-wracking. I think if you checked the armpits of my shirt that day, it was probably more sweat than on a game day. I think for me, it was with a lot of things I do, I have a vision for it, and then I leap and I try to see it through. So the biggest anxiety going into that was, will my vision for this class come to fruition here? You have all those pregame jitters, those game day jitters, and now it's like, will these kids, am I cool enough to hold their attention? Am I cool enough to make this thing conversational rather than just another class where you sit in your laptop and you just get through it and you get your grade and you move forward, right? Is the idea, or have I planned the lesson well enough to make it interactive, make it fun, make it a class that you take, you know, I would hope the most you've ever taken away from a course, right? So it was a great day. The class went well. It started slow, and students picked up as we went along. I think they quickly understood I'm a different style professor because I'm very casual and comfortable and we had fun and we're still building on concepts and just trying to learn. So yeah.
Listen, one more thing about the class. It's not a class just for athletes, and it's not just about managing money. There's another element here. It's the history of inequity and linking social justice with financial literacy. For those who do not know, how do you see the relationship between social justice and financial literacy?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think coming in, being 100% transparent and honest, which is that's how I operate, coming into the class, I wasn't a fan of the inequities piece. And the reason behind it was because I thought that it would deter all students from feeling comfortable taking the class. I thought that some people might look at it and be like, oh, that's just a class for people of color or something like that, right? Or, oh, that's going to be a woe is me thing. As we've taken the class, I see that that is actually one of the most important pieces of the class, if not more important than some of the financial literacy topics, because you start to peel back layers of why some people are stuck in certain situations, right? And you know, for example, people have always been told to, you know, save up money, put your money in the bank, put your money in the bank, put your money in the bank, put your money in the bank. And then you look at some people, you're like, why don't you have your money in the bank? Why don't you do that, right? That's what we all are taught to do. And then when you really peel that back and you understand, well, there's fees to a bank. And some people literally can't afford a bank account, right? Like, that makes the people in this class, hopefully we all get to the chance where we can have our financial freedom and financial independence, and hopefully they'll have empathy rather than looking down on those around them because of the inequities piece in our class. So it really goes hand in hand, and I hope it's really going to be the thing that makes, like I said, not the people necessarily at the top, but makes these people who will hopefully be more financially stable as a result of this class have empathy for those who aren't, right? And then with that being said, one of the cruxes of the class is to be able to teach that information to someone else. So we're actually teaching some high school kids in Philly this information. That's one of the ways I'm grading it, right? Like, can you teach this to your cousin? Can you teach this to your mother who you're trying to help her get out of debt or budget better? Can you teach this to a high school kid in Philly? And for me, that's the goal, is how do you take this information and start at Penn, but then disseminate it out throughout the world, to be quite honest. So it'll take time, but I'm willing to put that time and work in.
My man, I could not be more impressed. He is an NFL linebacker. He is an Ivy League professor, the co-professor of Herbs 140, Inequity and Empowerment, Urban Financial Literacy at the University of Pennsylvania, and a member of the Jets, Brandon Copeland, our guest. Brandon, so good to have you on. Really appreciate you and that conversation. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me. Take care.
As any coach or GM will tell you, the foundation of any great team is great talent. So it's no surprise the teams dedicate so much time and effort towards finding the right players. The same exact rule applies to you when it comes to hiring. You've got to find the top talent, but you don't have endless resources to find it. Luckily, what you do have is ZipRecruiter. They scout talent for you. With ZipRecruiter, one click, send your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. But they don't stop there. Their powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. It is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate right through the site within the very first day. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/clones. 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 This service is amazing. I use it myself. It would be foolish not to try it right now. ZipRecruiter.com/clones. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So let's talk Kyrie for a minute. Kyrie's rep has taken a beating lately. Kyrie Irving, you know, because of how his team, the Celtics, have been playing and then how he's responded to the criticism to how they're playing. Folks are calling him out as a player. Folks are questioning his ability to be the face of a franchise and whether or not this is the guy who's capable of leading from the front or if he needs somebody else to do it for him, like LeBron in Cleveland. There was that report from Kevin O'Connor. It said, quote, "Sources around the team told me that Irving's persona has changed too. He's become disengaged and detached from those around the team. There is talk that Irving's friendships on the team start and end with Tatum, with whom he shares an agent. Two sources peg Irving's change in demeanor to early February, around the time he was asked about the possibility of joining the New York Knicks next season." End quote. And there's also this notion from O'Connor that Kyrie, quote, "has grown increasingly frustrated with the intense media coverage of his future decision and the state of the team," end quote. I'll tell you what, based on how he's handled the media lately, that seems like a pretty safe bet. I mean, this guy's had some all-time horrible media appearances after losses recently. Now, as always, I want to give him a wide berth on that. I'm not going to rush in and kill a guy for having a bad day or even a couple of bad days with the media. Losing games and then having to answer questions about them is part of the job, but it's a tough part of the job. Sometimes guys don't handle that part of the job very well. Like, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt because he's Kyrie Irving, star player, world champion, former number one pick overall. Like, I want to give the guy the benefit of the doubt. And I'm sure that Kyrie, after he takes a step back, takes a deep breath, meets with the media in a situation where he didn't just lose a tough game, I'm sure the guy will come off a lot better. I'm sure he'll make a lot more sense. You know, as an example, yesterday. Yesterday, he met with the media. The Celtics had a day off, and he addressed why he has been coming off like a jerk of late with the media. Roll it.
Bro, I didn't really come into this game to be cameras in my face, you know, be famous, be a celebrity, wherever embodies that. So it's a little hard for me. You know, I wanted those things when I was younger, but now at this point in my career, I just want to play basketball at a very, very high level.
All right, did you hear that? Quote, "I didn't really come into this game to be cameras in my face, be famous, be a celebrity, whatever embodies that. It's a little hard for me. I wanted those things when I was younger, but now I just want to play basketball at a high level." I mean, there it is. There you go. Now you know. Now you know. It's not really on him. It's on all of us. We're the ones up in his grill. And he's not about that. Any of that. I mean, maybe when he was younger. Like, I don't know, 6 months ago. But now he's about the game. Now he's only about the game. So, if it's not too much to ask, get your cameras out of Kyrie's face. That's not why he plays. He doesn't play to be famous. He doesn't play to be a celebrity. Leave the guy alone. It's pretty basic. It's pretty easy. He only wants to play basketball, and he only wants to do it at a high level. Yeah, that and force his way out of a winning situation so he could have his own team. And wear elaborate makeup and costumes in a soda commercial. And then turn that soda commercial into a full-blown major motion picture with a bunch of other celebrities. And announce that he's going to EP and star in a new film about a haunted hotel in Oklahoma City. And mix in one look at me, put that camera in my face interview after another along the way. All those things. Oh, but don't put that camera in my face right now. Not now. I'm not about that. You should know that. I'm about basketball and basketball only and playing basketball at a high level. I guess what I'm saying is, you're lucky he even performs for you bastards. Leave Kyrie alone.
You're lucky she even performed for you bastards.
Leave Kyrie alone. Yeah, that's pretty rich. That's pretty rich. You're all about cameras being shoved in your face when they involved you starring in a movie based on a soda commercial that was released last year. The cameras did not seem to bother you very much then. And you were all about interviews when they involved you working with your idol, Brian Glazer, on a movie about a haunted hotel. But when those same cameras and mics come back, when your team goes into the tank, suddenly you don't want to be a celebrity. You don't want cameras in your face. You don't want to talk about that. Because you were about that when you were younger. What, like 6 months ago? That's not why you play the game? All right, so what are you about then, Kyrie? What's going to be? Because from here, you look like a dude who's never happy. A dude who will force his way out of a winning situation, get his own team, spout off asinine theories about the shape of the earth, get irritated when people ask you about asinine theories about the shape of the earth, star in movies, be a celebrity, and then when it all hits the fan in your real job that set up all those other jobs, then you say, get out of my face. I've never been about any of that, or I was when I was younger. So what's it going to be? I'll tell you what your problem is. Your problem is you want the rewards of celebrity without the responsibility of it. You want the perks and the benefits of having your own team without actually having the work that comes along with having your own team. You want to lead a team without actually leading it and being asked questions about leading it. And one more simple truth here. The problem is not that he's not leading the team. The problem is he is leading this team. He's led them to right where they are, from a conference finals team last year to a fifth place team this year. You see, if you are the leader and you aren't leading, it's still leading. A bad leader is still a leader. And that's exactly where Kyrie and the Celtics are right now. Hey, but again, please respect dude's privacy and do not ask him questions about how badly things are going right now, because that's not why he got into basketball. He got into basketball to star in soda commercials and movies that are based on soda commercials and movies based on haunted hotels. He did not get into basketball to be asked questions about basketball. And never, ever forget, you're lucky he even performs for you bastards.
You're lucky she even performed for you bastards.
Leave Kyrie alone.
Please.
Justice Hill is my guest and he is in studio. Justice, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Really good to see you. And I know you're getting your work in here in California. Mm-hmm. You had a huge combine in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Before we get into what happened, take me into the lead up to the combine. Like, what was your mindset going in? Were you approaching it like it's just another part of the process, or were you looking to put on a show?
I always got to put them on a show no matter what it is, if it's on the football field, anywhere. And so, like, since I've been out here, you know, I started off, my numbers weren't where I wanted to be. And so just being out here, training with Ryan Kaprick, proactive, you know, every day we just laid out a game plan. We got to work. And, I mean, every single day just came in working hard, getting closer to the number that I put down on paper at the beginning. And, I mean, it showed off at the end.
No, it did. You led all running backs in the 40, mm-hmm. the broad jump, and the vert. Now, I know you picked up a little bit of an injury, but overall, how mm-hmm. pleased were you with the performance? Do you feel like that was a successful business trip?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like it was a successful business trip. I mean, obviously you want to, like, even though I had some good numbers, I still wanted to improve on a little bit, little different areas. But, and then doing the whole thing, I really wanted to do that. But I mean, at the end of the day, I ran a good time, did some good numbers, and I feel like I helped myself.
Justice Hill joining me in studio. Now, guys always talk about the combine and how it's not just like the 40. There's right. a really grueling schedule. Oh, yeah. There's a lot that goes on away from the field. Like, right. what was a normal day for you like at the combine? Oh, what time man. Do you get up? What time do you go to bed? What are those days like?
I'm not even trying to relive it at this point, but I got there Monday.
And I'm not even trying to relive it at this point.
But the drills were on. One of the drills were on Friday, and so from Monday to Thursday, we was kind of basically. It was a lot of medical, and so we did that. Man, one day I was doing medical from 9 in the morning to almost 9 at night, and so it was a lot of waiting around, trying to get machines, meet with doctors and all that stuff. So it was a long day, but like average day was getting up around 6, and then I wasn't getting back home until like almost 12:30, 1 o'clock.
Wow.
So yeah, it was some long days, but I mean, obviously not everybody gets a chance to be there. So I was grateful for the opportunity.
Justice Hill joins me in studio again. I know you don't want to relive it, but when you talk about all the medical work, yeah. you know, there's that old saying that, like, if you're not hurt when you go there, you will yeah. be by the time you leave, because all oh, yeah. they do is pull and yank yeah. on everything for a whole
pull
day
and yank,
or two, right?
And then you barely get any sleep. So, I mean, you kind of, like, tax by the time those those final days come. But I mean, it was worth it though. It was a fun experience.
All right. So what about the meeting with the teams? The trip to Indy always includes meeting with the teams.
Right.
What are the conversations with the teams like, and what did you want the teams to come away thinking about you?
For me, it was a lot of just getting to know you for the first couple minutes. You just getting to know you, your background. And then from there, you move on to football stuff. And for me, we're just going through plays. Me trying to market myself, trying to show what I can do, showing that I can be a versatile player, and really just selling myself. And so at the end of the day, when I walk away from every interview, I felt like I did a good job selling myself. And all the teams, we had good connections. Obviously, we had a great conversation. And so I felt like I did a great job in interviews and moving forward, like I'm building great relationships with each coach.
Anything weird? Like every year, there's always those teams that ask weird questions. Like the one guy said that he was asked to have a staring contest with the Seahawks. You had another player who said that he was asked if he had both testicles.
Really?
What? Nah. Have you not heard that?
No, like I was expecting to get some crazy stuff because—
Did you get anything crazy?
I didn't get anything crazy.
Nothing
crazy. It was all normal questions. And I didn't get thrown off by anything. So I was like, man, because everybody I talked to that used to like that been through the combine process said they had something crazy. Like, but for me, I didn't have anything.
Dude, not one weird question.
Not one single
question. Not one staring contest.
Not one.
Good, man. Good. So Terrell Davis from the NFL Network was a Hall of Fame running back, of course. He's been talking about you. He's been talking about how much he likes your game. What's it mean to get that kind of praise from a legend like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it means a lot because, I mean, when you were a kid, you used to watch those guys. All the Hall of Famers that are right out there right now, and to hear them know who you are first off, that's a big thing. And then just to hear that they actually like your game, I mean, it means a lot to me.
We're talking to Justice Hill. He's joining me in studio. You know, when you think about Oklahoma State, you think about some of the best running backs in school history. That's a program that's got a tradition at the position. What's it mean to see your name up there with the likes of Barry Sanders and Thurman Thomas, to name a couple?
Yeah, it's crazy because, I mean, when I was a kid, again, I was an Oklahoma State fan. And so I was always a big Thurman Thomas and Barry Sanders fan. And even the more recent running backs like Joseph Randle, Kendall Hunter, all those guys, I mean, going there for me and playing the position I played, I mean, it meant the big deal for me. And so now being in the same conversation with some of those guys, I mean, it's crazy to really believe. Like, it's crazy that I'm in that conversation. So, I mean, I worked my whole life for it, and so it's good to finally be in those conversations.
Well, and you're right there. You're going to find out pretty soon where you're going to work and where you're going to live. Fact is, back in December, also, you announced that you would forego your senior season and enter the draft early. What was that decision-making process like, and ultimately, what led you to believe that now was the right time?
For me, I just felt like to improve as a player and improve myself, I wasn't going to be able to do that again in Oklahoma State. I felt like going to another team, going to a bigger stage, I'm going to be able to be more versatile and do more things that I want to do. And so that was the biggest decision for me. And then, I mean, I'm just ready to play. I made a lifelong dream to play in the NFL. And if the opportunity is there, why wouldn't I take it? So,
Justice Hill joining me in studio. Why not, right? Now, the thing is, you mentioned you were always an Oklahoma State fan growing up. You played your high school ball at Booker T. Washington.
Yeah, legendary.
Dude, it's legendary. But the story goes you weighed about $130 when you first arrived. Yeah. Is that true?
Yeah.
What were you like as a player when you first got there?
I mean, I still was in my opinion, I feel like I was still a good player. I mean, I was really light. And so, like, that was a big thing for me. Like, playing the running back, you know, you got to be bigger. So, I was just working hard every single day. I was working hard trying to get weight. And so, I mean, I gained weight to where I get recruited playing running back. And so, I mean, it was a long process, a lot of eating and a lot of working out. But, I mean, it was fun. And I enjoyed the process. So, I wouldn't want to change that.
All right, so if you're an Oklahoma State fan growing up, what was it like when they first started to come around and recruit you? And then what was it like when you got that offer?
Yeah, it was crazy because it was actually my first offer. And so I was always praying about it. And exactly, being an Oklahoma State fan and them being my first offer, it kind of meant something to me. And so I kind of pulled the trigger really early. And they offered me like the last couple weeks of January, like January 25th. And I committed like right after Valentine or I don't know, around the middle of February. And so it was a quick process for me. And so at the end of the day, I made the right decision, and I mean, I'm here now. So
you are here now. Justice Hill joining me in studio, in fact, and we're getting ready for the NFL draft. Let me ask you a couple of things about Mike Gundy. I saw him hop on Twitter last week with a video of you and Jordan Brailford where he was hitting 225 on the bench and then wishing you guys good luck. He says he got it up 8 times. You buy that? You think that he could put 225 up 8 times?
I mean, he might have got it twice. I don't know. He about 150, so I don't know if he actually on there working at eight eight reps. I'm not sure.
You don't think he maxed out at eight?
Yeah, probably about two or three.
All right, so there's that. What about back in the day? He had a rap battle with Darian Daniels before a meeting, allegedly. Yeah, yeah. Is that true, and what do you make of that?
It really wasn't a rap. It was like we were all in there. You know, the players getting there early, and so we was all in there, like, toasting each other, whatever. And then he came in, he put his two cents in. He was at Darian, but it was funny, though. It was a funny experience.
Give me an example. Like, what did he sound like? What did he look like? How'd that come off?
Oh, man. I really don't even... Like, he was on stage, Darian was in his seat, and he called him out, and then he just went with it, but it was cool, though. It was cool.
Was it cool? Or guys like, man, that's corny, man. Stop doing that.
Nah, it was cool because it kind of fit in what we was doing, so, I mean, it was funny, though.
Hey, I love the guy. What was he like to play for?
He was a cool guy, and so, I mean, we went in every day. He had a mindset. I mean, I had a culture that we come in, give full effort, leaders, that we just be tough, and so... having that mindset going into games, you know, it really prepares you. And then being a team, having a whole team, having the same mindset, having the same culture, I mean, it makes it easy to play for. And so we're all out there playing for each other. We're just trying to get to the same goals.
Justice Hill, my guest in studio. You know, it must have taken pretty quickly for you because your transition from high school to college, man, that's supposed to be tough. But you had a monster freshman year.
Right.
You were a freshman All-American. You were the Big 12 Freshman of the Year. What do you remember about that first year? And then how much confidence did that give you going forward?
For me, I've always been confident. Even from high school, I mean, middle school going to high school going to college. At the end of the day, it's just football. Like, it's a game. The game doesn't change. And so... really just the stage makes it bigger. But for me, just coming in my freshman year, I had a mindset that I wanted to be great. I wanted to do great things. And so if you think like that, if you think positive things and you think that you can do something, I mean, your body and you will do it. And so for me, it was just my mindset. I was going to come in, I was going to dominate. I was going to do everything on the field, off the field, even in the classroom. I wanted to do great things. And so if I think that, and I was thinking that, coming into it, and I mean, it all came to fruition.
Did you start every single day thinking, like, from the moment I wake up, I'm gonna dominate everything I do all day long?
You have
every
to.
Single task, that's every single day.
That's what you have to do. I mean, and if you want to be great, you got to think like that. So,
all right. So, one thing I know you also before you go that you've been working on with your training, your vision, and protecting your eyes.
Right.
Lay it out for me. What does that involve? Why are you doing that?
I mean, because you're playing football, you got to be able to see, right? And so, for me, I use these, you know, these optical glasses, they protect from blue light. And so, blue light kind of damage your eyes or it just keeps you up at night sometime because your body needs to start creating melatonin to get rest. And so rest is a big thing too. So for me, I wear these almost all the time. And so it helps me get some naps in during the day because I'm always not tired, but like when I'm ready to go to sleep, I'm going to be ready to go to sleep. And so for me, that's why I use these. And I mean, it's really been helping me with my vision. And like, I just want to be able to be best in every single aspect that I do. And so if it's vision, if it's taking care of my body, just doing like my nutrition, everything I want to be the best at it. So all these little things, even though it might not seem like a big deal, doing all those things over time is going to add up.
Like, rest and recovery is so huge. Are you a part of Nap Nation? Can you nap it out pretty well?
I can nap it out really well. It's hard out here because it's so sunny all the time. But yeah, back in Oklahoma, I can get my naps in.
You know, I saw somebody, I had a buddy of mine who was telling me, I've never seen this before, but we were on the road for Super Bowl and doing our workouts. But after the show, he'd come back and say, you know what? I'm going to have a cup of coffee and then I'm going to nap it out and then I'm going to work out. I'm like, how does that work? He said, you know, because it doesn't hit your bloodstream. Yeah. So you get that power nap in for 20 minutes. Then you get that double jolt when you wake up.
Man,
can you do that? It didn't work for me at all.
I've never even tried. I'm not even a coffee guy, but I mean, I wouldn't even think that would work.
It did for him, and people swear by it. Yeah,
man.
He said so. I'm with you. I am
a
coffee guy, and it did not work. All right, so really quickly, you got about 60 seconds. You're about 2 months away. What's the team going to get if they draft Justice Hill?
They're just going to get a great person, first off and foremost, and they're going to get a great player. Somebody that's going to be versatile, somebody that will come in and instantly make an impact because I'm a playmaker. And so for me, if you want to win, if you want somebody that's going to bring people to the stands, like, I'm an entertainer. And so, like, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to play it all. I'm going to give it all out there every single game. And so for me, you're just going to get a versatile player that's going to make plays and loves the game and is going to give it their all.
Hey, check this out. Remember the year 1989? You know, the year the World Wide Web was invented? Yeah, well, we've come a long way in 30 years. So why does it feel like the software that you use every single day at work is stuck in the past? Take a leap into the future by finding the right software for your business on Capterra.com. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. Search more than 700 specific categories of software. What I'm saying is, no matter what kind of software your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution fast. Join the millions of people who use Capterra every single month to find the right tools for their business. Like you're in the jungle. I knew my software was whack. I knew it was outdated. I had no idea until I jumped in with Capterra. I'm telling you, it's making a huge difference for us, and it can for you too. Visit Capterra.com/Rome for free today, and you'll find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business. Capterra.com/Rome. Let me spell that for you. Capterra, Capterra.com/Rome. Odds are, if you're listening right now, you've probably swung a stick at least once in your life. I mean, some of you get out to the track a couple of times a year. Some of you are straight addicts for the game. You know, junkies. You know who you are. Luxury wrenches in the sled. A subscription to Golf Digest that you get mailed to work. A swing that you cannot stop practicing in public. Point is, golf is a sport unlike any other because it's a sport that almost anybody can play and has. And if you've ever been out to the course, even once in your life, you know there are a few universal rules that you'll never forget that you have to abide by. Number one, never walk into somebody's backswing. Never walk in someone's line. And never, ever, under any circumstance, cheat. Cheating in golf is a cardinal sin. Cheating in golf is like murder in the first degree in any other sport. Whether you're a weekend hack or a tour pro, if you've ever been accused or even suspected of cheating, it's a reason to go. We all know the reasons to go. That is a reason to go, which means if you're going to accuse somebody of cheating, you better be right. You best be right, especially at a country club where members all know each other and reputations are second only to over-exaggerated net worth. Ever been to a country club? Ever been to a golf club? You know the bags that hang out there, what they talk about, how many square feet their home gym is, how much money they have, what they drive on the weekend, you know. Now, the only reason I know about this tourney is because of the video that was taken in a club bar afterwards. This is in South Africa. Let me tell you about this really quickly. Apparently, a member named Mike won the championship. But not without controversy, because somebody sitting five stools down stood up from his seat and he put Mikey on trial in front of the entire club on the biggest day of the year. Listen, as Mike gets called the worst thing that you can get called in golf.
You're a thief, man. You're a cheat. I don't care. I'll call you to your
face.
You're a thief.
All right, so you're a thief, man. You're a cheat. I don't care. I'll call that to your face. Well, apparently the dude yelling had some scorecard discrepancies with old Mikey Champion over there. Problem for this whistleblower is that Mike was not about to take that sitting down. Literally, remember what I said. Calling somebody a cheater in golf is a reason to go. Because in a matter of seconds, Mike explodes from the bar stool, walks right at the accuser, and headbutts this cat right through a window.
You're a thief, man. You're a cheat. I don't care. I'll call you to your
face.
You're a thief.
You
should, because you're a Mike.
Let me see about this dude. Unfortunately for the accuser, who just got headbutted, headbutted right through a window, it was so much worse than it sounded. And that sounded pretty damn bad, right? Because the accuser, I mean, not only was that a perfectly executed headbutt, not only did this guy fall all the way back through the window, that allowed Mikey Champion to grab this cat by the shirt and then feed him three vicious left hooks to the face for a second lunch.
You're a thief, man. You're a cheat. I don't care. I'll call you to your
The dude who called Mike a cheat and a thief, was wearing some post-round flip-flops, which he was literally knocked out of after he got head-butted halfway through a window and force-fed three additional haymakers to his teeth. Nothing more embarrassing than hanging halfway out of a glass window with your footwear laid out a yardstick away from your feet. In golf, there's an expression, you know, swinging out your shoes. Mike just swung another man out of his. So Mike won the tournament and he won the fight. But now the club is not very happy with him right now. And they issued an apology promising sanctions. So we'll see if old Mike ever gets a chance to defend his title, both as club champion and the heavyweight champion. You can actually hear at the end of the video, the accuser who just got his ass tuned up saying he's never going to bleeping play golf here again.
He's never going to play golf here again.
Right, bro. And you'll never eat solid food again. You'll never have a meal that doesn't involve a straw ever again. My man. Just like you'll probably never call anybody a cheater again, unless you want to get your head smashed through a window a second time. Look, I don't know if Mike cheated or not. I just know that that guy who said that he did went through a window for it. And I haven't seen or heard anybody get that jacked up since Greg Gianforte body slammed a Guardian reporter 2 years ago.
I'm sick and tired of you guys. The last guy that came here, you did the same thing. Get the hell out of here.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Chris Mannix. Brother, I'm going to start by saying you and I way back in the days to talk about quality of life. My man, you are adding more and more opportunities and responsibilities. Are you in any way compromising the quality of your life because you are going hard?
You know, I don't think so, Jim. At the same time, I'm talking to you from my living room in Boston, and my artificial Christmas tree is still up. So I think I could use a little more free time to you know, do stuff like, you know, house, you know, cleaning stuff. But other than that, I'm pretty good.
Bro, if I were you, I'd go check that front porch and make sure there's no pumpkins there also. Maybe take care of that too.
The pumpkin was there a little bit too long to the point where it started to kind of become one with the brick. That's when I had to get a shovel and pick it up and throw it in the garbage.
Because it was not fake like that tree. Chris Mannix
joining us. The tree can be up forever.
All right, so we got a couple of compelling messes right now, Chris, in the NBA. The Lakers and the Celtics, because you're in the East. Let me start right there. When you look at the Celtics right now, what kind of thoughts do you have and what do you see?
Well, they continue, Jim, to look like a team that doesn't know how to play with each other. And I've been around this team a lot. I don't think there are personal beefs within that locker room. I think everybody, by and large, gets along. But, you know, the continued problem of having a handful of guys at one point of their careers and a handful of guys in another just continues to crop up. And it creates chemistry issues that showcase on the court all the time. I mean, this is a team that should have explosive offensive firepower. Every coach that plays Boston, you know, pregame, you know, practice in the morning, they like to talk about the names the Celtics have on that bench, the guys they can bring off the bench like Gordon Hayward and Jaylen Brown and others. But those names and that talent hasn't manifested itself into a successful unit. This team at very few times during this season has looked like a group that has bonded in the same way the Celtics teams from the last 2 years have bonded. I don't know how to explain that, except to say that, you know, some of these young guys who went to a conference finals last year, who were one win away from getting to an NBA finals, they just haven't fully embraced the sacrifice that needs to be made when you play on a team like this. And, you know, look, we've got some 20-odd games to go before the end of the season. I'm not convinced that they're going to get there.
Chris Mannix joins us. Now, one name we have not mentioned is Kyrie Irving. What do you make of the way he has handled the recent struggles that he and the team have had?
Kyrie has really struggled with a leadership role. And it's almost like he's trying a whole bunch of different things to see what works. And none of it at this point has worked. He's gone from, you know, expressing concern about the way the team is playing to criticizing his teammates in a roundabout kind of way, to expressing unbridled optimism, even in the face of incredible adversity. I mean, I was at the game in Chicago, the team in the Bulls that they beat by 56 points back in December that they lost. And after that game, Kyrie standing there being like, no, we'll be fine. We'll be fine because I'm here. And then they continue to lose even after that. So he's just sort of trying different things to motivate this team and get it on the right page. But you have to wonder, Jim, if this whole leadership thing is something Kyrie's really built for. And, you know, there's only a handful of players that can do it at a high level and take on a team and lead it in a particular way. And Kyrie's really struggled with that. And, you know, how he's able to blend this team together in the last 20-some-odd games, I think it's going to be really important. One thing that you have to remember about this team, Jim, is that seeding's not really important with this group. I mean, if they're the fifth seed, if they're the third seed, that's really kind of the best they can do at this point. I don't think it matters all that much. What matters is how they're playing going into the playoffs. And right now this team is, I don't know if they're at a low point, but they're certainly playing some of their worst basketball. And Kyrie, you know, has to kind of take some responsibility for that.
Chris Mannix joining us. All right, so bring it out west. You've got the Lakers, and they're not mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, Chris, but they are effectively eliminated from the playoffs. But that's being said, what do you do with LeBron? I mean, they did not shoot. They did not surround LeBron with shooters in the offseason. They were going to make the playoffs if he doesn't get hurt, and then the bottom absolutely fell out. Exactly what the hell did happen with the Lakers this year?
Well, I mean, there were two things I said at the start of the season, I think have held true, and you brought up one of them, that they didn't surround LeBron with shooters. They basically tried to reinvent the wheel when the wheel wasn't broken. I mean, Miami did things a certain way. Cleveland took it to a nuclear level with shooting. And the Lakers, at the start of the season, or the offseason, said, we're going to try something different. We're going to put playmakers around him and ball handlers around him. And that's just new, and that hasn't worked in the past with LeBron. And that hasn't worked now. The other part of it, which I thought going into the season, which was ratcheted to another level, you know, back in February, was that there weren't enough guys on this team that had real equity in this team. And at the time I said this and wrote this back in, you know, September, October, you know, they had, you know, I was talking about guys like Lance Stephenson and Rajon Rondo and JaVale McGee and Michael Beasley, guys that were on one-year contracts. You could now add to that list in February the young guys, the Ingrams, the Kuzmas, the Balls, guys that found themselves in trade rumors. Real trade rumors, by the way, whatever Jeannie Buss has to say about it. Those are real offers that the Lakers were making to get Anthony Davis. And these guys, you know, suddenly when the trade deadline passed, they had to have been looking around going, you know, what am I doing here? You know, LeBron came in talking about winning with us, and now in a roundabout way, he's effectively trying to trade us. So I think that, you know, when you had those trade talks come up, I think it ruined any kind of ability for this team to come together during tough times. And we've seen that really manifest itself, not in the losses to good teams, but in the losses to New Orleans and to Memphis and to the Clippers just last night. I mean, they have really struggled against teams that if you're a playoff contender, you've got to beat.
I think, Chris, that is such a key point that you make, that if you've got a bunch of vets on one-year deals, they know they're not going to be there the next year. You got a bunch of younger guys who don't know whether they're coming or going because of the trade rumors. Of course this thing's not going to come together when it all hits the fan. So what about LeBron? What do you think LeBron makes of this season, and what do you think he makes of how his teammates played this season?
Well, I think he's got to be frustrated. At the same time, you know, we talked about Kyrie accepting responsibility. LeBron does too. I mean, he's posted some kind of Russell Westbrookian lines in the last, you know, couple of weeks where he's shooting well under 50%. And, you know, Twitter's a wonderful place for some things. And showcasing defensive gaffes is kind of where it sort of thrives. And we've seen on social media some of the defensive gaffes that LeBron has had, just whether it's a lack of effort or being in the wrong place. He's just not able to expend as much energy as you need to be a great two-way player. And I've given him a pass a lot of times, a lot of people have, because of the energy he has to expend on the offensive end of the floor. But this is three, four seasons in a row, probably two or three seasons in a row, where he has just been a mediocre or worse defensive player. So I think he's got to be frustrated by his teammates' inability to rise to certain occasions. But at the same time, when you play the way he's played, you've got to take some ownership in it as well.
Chris Mannix joins us for a few more moments. So once the Lakers are officially eliminated, or even before then, is there any reason for them to play LeBron, or should they just shut him down?
I would probably say you shut him down. The question is, would LeBron allow himself to be shut down? I mean, LeBron over the years has taken pride in playing as many games as possible. Now, you know, clearly that's changed because the 18 he missed with that groin injury in January. But you know, I wonder if he would resist being shut down towards the end of the season. But I think it's advisable. I mean, at this point, if you're this far out of the race and you're playing the way they're playing, sinking into the standings even further is not a bad idea. I think, Jim, if last check, they're only a game up on New Orleans right now in those Western Conference standings. So if you fall a couple more places, maybe you put yourself in position for a higher lottery pick. Maybe that pick helps you or becomes an even more attractive trade asset as you try to rekindle those Davis talks this offseason.
Well, I think that I'd shut him down for sure. So to that point, how urgent is it for them to make that deal for Davis this summer? And Chris, if they don't, where do Magic and Rob Pelinka go then?
I think it's really urgent, if for no other reason than outside of Anthony Davis, the free agent class of 2020 isn't exactly robust. Draymond Green probably headlines it away outside of Davis, and the rest of that group is restricted free agents, and we know they don't go anywhere. You know, the 2019 class is strong, but, you know, from the people I talk to, none of the top-tier guys, Jim, are considering the Lakers as their top choice. I mean, you know, maybe the Lakers can work their way into it, but you know, they're not going to have a pretty that compelling an argument based on what they've done this season. Certainly not as compelling as, say, the Clippers might because of what they've done and the infrastructure they have in place right now, or some other teams might at this point. I think they've got to go all in, you know, and I don't know what that means, if it means, you know, going 3-4 draft picks plus swap rights, but they've got to go all in to get Anthony Davis, because if they don't, I'm just not sure who that other star is that's going to be available. Now, that it changes a lot. The way the league moves, there could be a star that becomes available at midseason next year, but right now, looking at the landscape, acquiring Anthony Davis has got to be a top priority, and to do that, you've got to find a way to outbid a Boston, which is always going to be gunning for him.
So then a quick follow-up to make matters worse for L.A. Is it a foregone conclusion, Chris, that Kawhi Leonard is going to go to the Clippers in the offseason, or because it's Kawhi, can you really not count on anything?
Yeah, he's wildly unpredictable. You know, the Clippers have done the legwork. And when I say that, I mean, I wrote about this back in December, January, and, you know, they have a presence at every Raptors game. They're, you know, working as hard as they can, as best they can, to make it known to Kawhi and the people around him that they want him in Los Angeles. You know, Kawhi is certainly a unique guy, and what people around him say may not necessarily indicate what Kawhi is thinking. And at the same time, I look at the Raptors right now as at minimum co-favorites to win the East. If they win the East, would Kawhi Leonard really walk away from a finals team at this stage of his career? That's another thing you have to take into account. But I do think that it's Clippers Raptors in the battle for Kawhi Leonard in the offseason.
I mean, business is business, Chris, but how do you think the Raptors feel every time they see a Clipper presence in their building or on the road, every time this guy takes the floor?
Oh, I don't have to think what the answer is, Jim. I know. They're not happy at all. And, they've done some things to try to prevent that from happening. I believe when the team was in Los Angeles to play the Clippers, they didn't even play Kawhi, you know, just trying to stick it to him. But they are not pleased by some of the things that the Clippers have done in sort of their own courtship of Kawhi Leonard.
I wouldn't think. Chris Mannix is an NBA writer for Sports Illustrated, an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston. He is a boxing analyst for DAZN. He is the host of the Crossover Podcast and SI Boxing with Chris Mannix, and a good, good friend of the program. Chris, thank you so much. Great job as always.
Anytime, Jim.
Good night now!